Hello, listeners. Johnny here. Welcome to our review of J.J. Abrams' first Star Trek feature. When Brian and I discussed reviewing all the Star Trek movies for the 50th anniversary, we had planned on them to be part of our regular episodes once a month. You can go back and listen to our review of Into Darkness as part of episode 26. After some discussion, we decided instead to make them monthly bonus episodes. We hope you enjoy our look into each of the films, and we would love to hear your thoughts and feedback. As always, everything about the Infamous Podcast and ourselves can be found at infamouspodcast.com. Lastly, if you are listening to us through iTunes, please help us out by subscribing and giving us a 5-star review. This helps the show move up in the ranking. With that said, let's warp into the alternate universe of J.J. Abrams' Star Trek.
All right, so this is our review of J.J. Abrams' Star Trek 2009. As you just heard, I've been holding Johnny hostage for weeks trying to get him to do this.
That's not the version you heard.
No. No, that isn't the version you heard, because there was a hostage version before. But what
Hello,
you guys, what,
Johnny here.
What you Help haven't me. Seen is what Johnny was reading is I just cut out letters from magazines and pasted it all together. So
That's why you got confusing at certain points.
All right, so welcome to our review. Like Johnny said, this is the 50th anniversary of the Star Trek. I always call it Star Trek. I know that's not right.
You use track like
Yeah, I just track like T-R-A-C-K. Okay. And I always have. And I know that's not right. But anyway, so this is the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. And as planned, we're going to review all of the movies. They do. Yeah. So. And we are doing it reverse chronologically. So you can go back to episode 26, like Johnny said before.
Welcome to Reverse Trek.
And listen, that would be it. That's our other podcast, Reverse Trek.
Yeah.
But you can go back to episode 26 and listen to what we had to say about Benedict Cumberbatch as Khan.
Yes.
And Johnny's thought that he should have just been called John Harrison the whole time.
Yeah.
Which I wholeheartedly agree with.
Yeah, that would have made the storyline better.
All right. So if you're listening to this show and you haven't seen J.J. Abrams' original Star Trek, just a quick recap of the story.
Synopsis?
Yeah. Should I do it like Kirk or like William Shatner?
No.
So before we started recording this, I was like reading Johnny's script like with the worst accents I could think of. Anyway. All right. So the story is a brash James T. Kirk tries to live up to his father's legacy with Mr. Spock keeping him in check as a vengeful time-traveling... With Mr. Spock keeping him in check, comma, as a vengeful time traveling Romulan creates black holes. Because I'm gonna chew through this. Time traveling Romulan creates black holes to destroy the Federation one planet at a time. It really could not be more summed up into one sentence. So.
And I thought my hostage note was...
All right. Just real quick. I really enjoyed this movie. I saw it in the theater. Like top five Star Trek?
Top five Star Trek movies.
Okay.
Yeah. It's in my top five.
Okay.
Which we probably should post a list of our...
Is I'll put in the sidebar on the website. Yeah. I'll make a little list of like what we've reviewed and like... where they rank.
Right.
The way
that we should do it is every time we talk about a Star Trek movie, just fill the slot in.
But just, put the number in with it. Yeah. So,
I think that would be a cool idea.
I think for me, this one is probably number 3.
Okay.
So, it's pretty high up.
Oh, yeah, you're really up there.
I'm going to gush about this one, and Johnny will be the more pragmatic review, I'm sure. All right. So...
There's enough to gush about this movie.
Yeah. This movie kicks off with the USS Kelvin on the edge of space.
Right.
And we have Thor as the first officer, who happens
referred to him as Thor.
To be Jim Kirk's dad. And then we have Emma Swan, who's pregnant with Jim Kirk, down in sickbay, who happens to be Jim Kirk's mom.
Yeah.
That right there is a great superhero mashup
couple. And the captain of the Kelvin is the terrorist that kidnapped Tony Stark.
Yep. So.
Who also was one of the senior members at Warehouse 13.
Yes. And he was on 24, I think, as a bad guy.
Whoa.
So. But, I mean, he's in Arab-looking actor.
I was gonna say, he gets typecast.
He has as that ethnic, just kind of look. He could be Italian. He could be Hispanic. He could be Arab.
Just for his little bit of a role in this movie, he was awesome.
He was. He was super strong. If they were going to do a TV series and they could get him and go back and do like USS Kelvin as like an adventure and, you know, have them. Because I know they couldn't get Hemsworth at this point.
Sure they could. But I mean, what's he doing? Avenger movies and Thor movies?
He's so little.
Yeah.
Like, he just looks so young and little, well, especially and going back now.
This was 2 years before Thor, I think. And yeah, he's super thin. He's super clean.
He's got the, like, whiffle.
Like, he looks like his brother. I mean,
Liam. Yeah, he does.
He looks like Liam, but with blonde hair.
And better acting skills.
Yeah, well.
So. Yeah. But yeah, so it opens with Kelvin approaching this anomaly.
Yeah, space. If you pay attention to when the movie opens and they show the Kelvin for the first time, they're getting subspace, like, messages saying, there's a storm in space, lightning in space, you know, go check it out, pretty much, is what they're being told. And they're pulling up to it.
Right.
And all of a sudden, a giant ship comes through the hole.
I did not write down. What was the name of Nero's Narada. Ship? The Narada. That's right. After his wife.
Yeah.
So, which I'm going to talk about that later on.
Oh, yeah. That's in my dislikes.
Yeah. Okay.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And because we've talked about this several times. And it is my biggest pet peeve. All right. So, the Narada is one of the coolest looking things that they've done on screen in a while. It's this,
which if you knew the origin from what we were talking about, let's just go into.
Okay, so hold on. The countdown, but the Narada, it's like all like spikes and arms and just
The like, whole front has of the its ship own... looks like a threat. Like,
yeah,
just looks like, you know, like, I'm not even gonna make a promise. I'm gonna make a threat.
It's like I took like 8 scorpions and zip tied them together, and then like, you know, all their tails are facing the same way. And it seems to have its own little like gravitational pull because there's like stuff floating around
right
in there.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Okay. So I'm just going to hop to it.
Yeah.
Okay. So before this movie came out, there was a comic done by IDW called Countdown.
Yeah. They have the publishing rights to Star Trek. Mm-hmm. They've had them before this movie was talked about.
Before the movie came out.
Well, yeah.
And what Countdown was basically a 4-issue prequel.
Mm-hmm.
Go read it. It's amazing.
Yeah, you can get it in trade.
And
for like $12.99, I think.
Yeah. Or you could probably get the issues in dollar bins at this point. It's basically the origin of Nero.
Yeah.
And his ship. And why he has a mad hate on for Spock. And it was written by how do you pronounce that? Orsi?
Oh, Roberto.
Yeah, it was written by Roberto Urti and Alex Kurtzman.
Yeah,
they wrote
the
comic.
Mike Johnston
did the art.
Johnston from IDW was their co-writer.
Right, I'm sorry.
Because he you know, he writes he can write the sequential stuff of a comic book.
So, but they wrote the story.
Yeah.
They wrote Star Trek.
Yeah.
The movie. They were the main writers. They
right.
like, you know, it wasn't like someone else wrote a first draft and they came in and cleaned it up. They sat with J.J. Abrams and made this movie up. All right. So then they did this prequel comic that included Spock Prime, you know, Captain Picard was in there.
Geordi
LaForge had a huge thing, which Spock's ship, he's the one who
made
it.
Captain Data.
I think Worf was in there, if I remember.
Yeah, I was
going
to say General Worf.
So, because he was back with the Klingon Empire.
He was with the Klingons, yes.
So it was this great bit where you understood about...
There's parts of it that tie into the movie.
The Red Matter.
Yeah.
Is one of them, which I don't remember it being the Rimbaldi ball from Alias in the comic, like it was in the movie, but
it's been a long time since I read the story.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it was an awesome story. I mean, so, I had picked it up and I picked up the first issue and I bought an extra copy for you.
You did. You bought it for me.
Because I thought you're going to dig this too.
And so, we see Romulus and Remus both. No, Romulus is destroyed, and half of Remus is destroyed before Spock's able to save or stop the
event from happening. Yeah, but there was a lot of story with
Him trying to get there, him trying to get the Romulan Council to let him help.
Yeah.
You know, at one point he's like, "I'm just going to do it. Build me a fast ship, Geordi."
Right.
And you know, and he's working with Nero.
Yeah.
And you know, it was this great backstory that they completely abandoned.
Right. I mean, the only mentions of it in the storyline, like, that you catch where it's like, how did he know about James Kirk? Yeah. Nero at one point is on the Enterprise E.
Yeah.
With Captain Data. And, you know, obviously he's a guest because he's a friend of Spock.
Yep.
And he literally reads about the history of the Enterprise and reads about James Kirk.
I think Archer showed up on there and stuff too. Yeah. I mean, it was just about the history of the line
of the ship.
So, and
I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, in the movie, Nero confronts Kirk and it's like, well, how did you know about him?
Right.
They left out, like, you know, there's like these little gaps where you're like, well, I know that. I know what's going on, but nobody else the theater would have known what was going on.
When he sees Enterprise and stops the attack.
Right.
Like, that just made zero sense.
Right.
Like, how does he know Spock is on there? And, right. Okay. So, but that's jumping ahead. So, it's this comic that literally segues into the Narada and I forget the name of Spock's ship, but it had a name as well. His little squiddy ship.
Yeah.
Both going in to the wormhole.
Right.
That was created.
But before they go into the wormhole, the Narada, who originally was just a mining ship,
right.
Like when Romulus is destroyed, Nero loses his mind. His crew, who's a loyal crew, follows him and does whatever, and they find a secret Romulan base where the Romulans build his ship to be bigger and stronger with Borg technology.
With Borg technology, so it'll grow and, you know, it'll assimilate to the technology. It'll repair itself. It'll just be stronger than anything that the 24th century Federation can even match.
Right, because it was the whole point that he was going to get revenge on the Federation, and then, you know, it was revenge on the Federation and Spock. So he chases Spock down, and Spock was going to destroy the star that had to explode it because it was going to destroy more.
Yeah, Spock drops the red matter in,
and it turns into a black hole. Mm-hmm. And Nero's chasing him, and this is all in the comic book. Nero's chasing him, the Narada and the jellyfish. That's what
the jellyfish. Thank you.
Literally get caught in the pool of the black hole. And at the end of the book, it just shows them both being pulled in, and we literally go into the movie.
And it says, to be continued on May 7th or whatever it was.
And literally, like, the Narada is coming out of the black hole and attacks the Kelvin.
And you wonder, where's the jellyfish, if you read the comic? Because that was my first thought.
Your thought and my thought was, where's Spock?
Mm-hmm.
And which is the same question that Nero's crew is asking, because the next thing they do is say they blow the hell out of the ship, kill a lot of people, and then send your captain over.
Right.
And it's like, it's what, I can't remember his name, Cliff.
Oh, Clifton Collins.
Clifton Collins, yeah. Clifton Collins Jr. Is Nero's right-hand man.
The greatest chameleon in Hollywood.
Yeah. So. And he literally comes onto the view screen and says, hi, send your captain over. We got some questions to ask.
We would like to talk to him.
Yeah. So he goes over and they're questioning him. And literally it's like,
well, they don't know that.
They don't know they're in the past.
Right.
And the captain of the ship's looking at them like, who the hell are you guys? Mm-hmm. And
because they would not have known Romulans at that point.
They do know the Romulans.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, because Enterprise.
Because everything's changed. Yeah. I mean, there's a shift in the whole timeline.
Yeah. You're right. Point. I'm sorry. I forgot.
So, you know, he's like, they're pretty much interviewing him. And like, you know, where is Ambassador Spock? And he's like, I don't know who Ambassador Spock
he's
is.
He's a little boy on Vulcan.
And then all of a sudden, I think it was just the idea that they wrote it where, and Clifton Collins is good enough that he has this look on his face like, wait a minute. And he goes, what's the star date?
Yeah.
And he could rattles off the star date and they realize, oh, we're in the past.
Yeah. And Nero then
just kills him.
And that trident never came back into play.
Not really.
That was such a cool weapon. Yeah. You know, and there was a fight at the end.
Well, see, that trident came into play with all the stuff that was deleted.
Right.
Because that was supposed to be, he uses that trident. And I mean, that's another tie-in comic book.
Right.
The Nero comic book. He uses that trident when he escapes Rurapinthe.
Right. So, for people who don't know, Rurapinthe is the Klingon prison planet.
Yeah.
And so the reason the Narada disappears.
We'll follow the movie.
Right. So the Kelvin badly damages badly the Narada. Damaged,
but still a usable weapon.
Right.
Itself, just being a usable weapon. Captain Kirk at this point, because his captain is dead, and he told him, you're the captain on the starship. So Captain George Kirk commands everybody to abandon ship.
For 8 minutes.
So everybody's abandoning ship. His wife's pregnant. She's being abandoned.
Was it 12 minutes? And he saved 800 lives. Right. That's what it was.
But it's like, so everybody's leaving the ship, and he's preparing to, you know, turn the ship on Narada.
Right.
And, you know, he punches in for the autopilot. Nothing happens. The autopilot's destroyed. So he has to choose, you know, the good of the many outweigh the good of the few. Goes back to everything Star Trek. It's
the whole purpose of Star Trek.
Right. So, I mean, it's one of those things where, and I, it's funny because I told her when we were watching the theater, like after we got out, and it was cool because my mom took me to see Star Trek IV. That's the first Star Trek movie I've seen in a theater.
Cool.
She knew that I liked Star Trek at that point. I was watching Star Trek The Next Generation, or I hadn't even watched Star Trek The Next Generation. And she wanted to go see the movie about the whales. This is the way that she put it. She wanted to go see the movie about the whales. And she had no idea what she was opening up to somebody.
Yeah.
But when Star Trek came out, I took my mom to see it with us.
Cool.
Because I thought she would get a kick out of, you know, going to see a movie. And, you know, she doesn't do that often. And she really liked it. But I told Elva, I said, when we watched it, and he's like, you know, telling everybody to get off the ship, it was literally the Lost death scenes. You know how everybody die in Lost?
Right.
Because the movie's J.J. Abrams.
Yes.
The composer is Michael Giacchino, who composed the music for Lost.
Correct.
So when he's talking to his wife, who's giving birth to Jim Kirk, it's the Lost music.
Yeah.
It's literally, honey, I love you. I love you. And then he dies.
Right.
His ship, the Kelvin, literally blows the Narada to non-functioning capabilities. So in the way the script was supposed to go. So
before that, I just want to talk about James Kirk's birth scene.
Yeah.
It was it was very heartfelt.
Yeah.
Like you immediately identified and felt for George.
Yeah.
Which I think they had to.
Yeah, they did a classic Lost thing where because
in, you know, the Prime version, right. George is James's hero.
Yeah.
In the
Prime universe, George didn't die that way.
Right.
George lived to be an old man.
And he encouraged Jim to go to Starfleet.
I mean, as a fan, as a Star Trek fan, I know this backstory that George actually got to see Kirk Prime become the captain of the Enterprise. And, you know, Kirk in the Prime universe is the man he is because of his father.
Right.
And in this universe, and I know that, you know, J.J. Abrams and the people who were writing this movie and working on this movie knew all this history. They had access to everything. So it's like they came up with a great idea of, we'll kill Kirk's dad first off.
Yeah.
And let's make this character a damaged character. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know.
But the whole thing going back and forth, like, well, what should we name him? Let's name him after your dad.
Yeah.
And he's like, Tiberius? That's the worst. Like,
and I'm like, that was a cool thing because they had never said where James Tiberius had come from.
And so it answered a question that, like, I think a lot of people always had, like, where the hell did the name Tiberius come from? And then it's like, no, we'll name him after your dad and we'll call him Jim.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right there, I identified, like, yes, this is a different universe, but, like, this is our constant.
Right.
And, you know, again, so then when he does crash into the Narada and cripples it,
right?
Like, you feel for it, and then you understand this is a whole new ball game,
right?
And you know, then it jumps. So they left things out.
Cut version, you know, this movie was.
Do
cut.
They have an uncut version where there was it never includes an uncut all version? That? Did they film those scenes?
Some of the deleted scenes are some of the Rurapente stuff, like not the whole thing. And you can go find that comic book too, Star Trek Nero. The ship was so damaged and it was near Klingon space that the Klingons claimed it.
Yeah.
And then took, Nero and his crew prisoner on the Rurapente planet. Because literally when Nero comes back,
he's missing into part the story, of his he's ear, he's got the ear, big and scar. They
explain it.
Right.
So yeah, that was just one of those things again, where it's like, I understand that you have to edit a movie down to a watchable time and all that type of stuff. Cool. But go read those two books mm-hmm. to enhance your viewing and honestly, pleasure.
The Nurupinde stuff, they could have cut out some of the Vulcan stuff with, like, the High Council.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, and changed some of that to include that, because I think the end would have made more sense.
Right. Well, it's when they reappear,
right.
it's like, where they've been for 25 years, just hanging out. Just chilling just in space.
Chilling like villains.
Right, yeah. And it, well, and it's the whole thing where, you know, when Uhura mentions
the attack.
Decimation of a Klingon fleet, and we're jumping ahead.
By one ship. One Romulan ship.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that type of stuff where it was like, oh, well, okay. I think the opening of the movie was the Kobayashi Maru.
Yeah.
It really was. I mean, you know, it was a Kobayashi Maru situation.
Yeah, it's unwinnable.
And the one thing that, you know, because I build more story into mm-hmm. my head than what they do, all this stuff was recorded. Everything yeah. that happened was recorded. So Jim Kirk went back and watched his dad die.
Yeah.
And even made himself more angry in that. Because when we meet, you know, we meet Spock on Vulcan as a kid.
So immediately following, yeah. The Kelvin's destruction, we're on Vulcan.
And yeah, we get the opening Star Trek. Yeah. And then we go to Vulcan.
Right. And so then we have this little kid who we just all assume is Spock.
Yeah. I mean, you see a Vulcan kid.
It's Vulcan. He's got the bowl cut. Yeah. You know.
They're in a school and they're all being asked the questions, you know, that Spock was asked in Star Trek IV.
Yep.
Literally, it's almost the same exact
and then it gets the how do you feel?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, this is definitely Spock. And you see then
Spock standing there after the class and three mm-hmm. bullies. You know, Vulcans are supposed to be unemotional, but these three do not like
Spock. That didn't make a lot of sense. But, well, like, so the reason they don't like Spock, it makes sense
after he beats
right.
the kid, because obviously Sarek comes to see him and tells him, we hold back our emotions, right. but we do have emotions.
So,
and it's one of those things where,
and the reason they don't like Spock is obviously because he's half human.
Right, yeah. So. That's more what it is like, you know, your father's a traitor because he married a human woman.
Yep.
You know, Winona Ryder. I mean, it was, you know, kind of cool.
Wing.
It was cool to see her. I mean, it was cool, like, you know, we didn't know who Chris Hemsworth was at the time.
No.
We did. I think we barely knew who.
I think the only thing I'd ever seen Chris Pine in before this was
Princess Diaries 2.
No, the
smoking. That was the only thing I'd see.
Smoking Aces.
Oh, okay.
And he doesn't even. He's not even recognizable from the yeah. character he plays in that movie.
Right, but so. I think the only thing I had seen him in was Princess Diaries 2. Yeah,
I've never seen that one. So
yeah. It's okay. It's a Disney movie.
We'll just put that, the conversation we were having before we started yeah. recording this, we'll put that in the tally of the Disney movies I haven't
right,
seen.
Yeah, column. Yeah, there you go. But, you know, it was cool to see Ben Cross, who I knew from the Dark Shadows right. remake, not the movie, the TV series remake, and Winona Ryder as mm-hmm. Spock's parents.
Yeah.
The kid that played young Spock. Man, he was awesome.
He was great.
He was really good.
They could have done like a young Spock television show with that yeah. kid, like the Adventures of Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
But like of Spock, that would have been kind of cool too.
But I mean, that was, you know, just to show that Spock didn't have a place.
Yeah.
But he was trying. And then it goes to, I think part of it, to him being
besides
older.
Not having a place, I think it showed he needed to learn where he fit into the universe.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, you know, logically moving into as he gets older,
yeah,
he's in front of the Science Council.
The one part of the movie that just pulls me out of the movie.
That really? Part
pulls me out because of who's the head of the Science Council is somebody who's been in multiple Star Treks before.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those things where you couldn't have cast somebody else.
Just some nobody. Or, yeah. You know, somebody I mean, with the, a British accent.
The actor's
accent.
Great. William Morgan Shepherd. Yep. He's a great actor, but it's like, when you start throwing people in that you know from other Star Treks, it's like, okay, that's disconcerting.
Yeah.
So I think that was one of the little complaints I yeah. had about the movie.
So, but Spock then makes a decision at this point. So they offer him admittance into the Vulcan Science Academy.
Even with your disability.
And they say, even with your disability. Yeah. And so this is where the human side of Spock uh-huh. really like takes over. And like very much you like, I would have liked to have seen further on in the movie and definitely in Into Darkness where Jim would have brought like this side out of him more,
yeah.
More than he did. He did a little right. bit, like, but he's like, well, thank you for the consideration, but I'm going to join Starfleet.
Yeah,
I'm out.
My application. Yeah, I'm just like flipped the Vulcan finger off at everybody and walked out.
He
of the
drops
room.
The mic, you know. So it was his CM Punk pipe bomb moment. And
but it was the thing where, you know, Sarek's on the council and he's standing there watching this, and he obviously Vulcans don't have a reaction, but you kind of get the hint that Ben Cross played it like he was proud of him.
Yeah.
Like for making his own decision.
He texted Winona Ryder. Yeah. Like, you know, he chose Starfleet, SMH.
Yeah.
You know. But I'm proud. Vulcan proud.
Yeah, just I don't like know. A straight face. Like, oh, he's smiling.
It's just that one where it's like the beady eyes and the straight mouth.
Yeah,
that's like
exactly.
That's all Vulcan emoji. Yeah. It's like it's like the conversation between Trey Parker and Matt Stone in Basketball where they're like, dude. Dude.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Like, you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah,
here.
Exactly. But so he goes off, and then we
go to Jim Kirk
as a kid, little boy.
Yeah, stealing a car,
rocking out to the Beastie Boys,
as you would expect Jim Kirk to steal a car.
It's a beautiful Corvette.
Yeah,
you know, he steals it. He drives by his brother,
which. In the movie, he's not his brother because he has a different name altogether.
Right.
He calls him Johnny.
Yeah.
And that, but in the script, it was originally supposed to be George Jr.
Right.
Which, you know, is part of the canon of Star Trek that he had an older brother. And that, but I know it had to have been your favorite part when he gets a call from his uncle and it's Greg Grunberg.
Yeah. I was like, Grunberg again? Look here, J.J. Abrams. All right.
You know what?
JJ, you and I are coming to a good place. Like, what you did with The Force Awakens, I've forgiven a lot. I really have. And what you did with these movies, I'm back on board with you as a fan.
Yeah?
Enough of the Greg Grunberg. Enough.
Don't you know that Snap Wexley is a main character in the next
No, I know. Hours? And he's got, like, a Lego set coming out and a bobblehead and I think a Black Series figure.
Guess what you're getting for Christmas. Guess what you're getting for Christmas?
Guess what's getting burned in effigy? I'm going to do a whole voodoo ceremony. So
the thing they left out of
story. Let me just explain something here.
Oh, God.
The reason I dislike Greg Grunberg so much is because of the TV show Heroes.
Really?
Because his Matt Parkman character was so bad.
Couldn't you just erase that from your memory?
I wish. I really do wish. But like he was so bad. And then with Heroes Reborn... They made him worse. I didn't think it was possible.
I didn't get that far.
All right. Rant over, you know.
Okay. So originally, and it was a big hoopla because like somebody had read the script. Originally, this uncle or stepdad, because they kept going back and forth on who he was abusing James Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he's angry. And they left it out, which I'm glad they did. Because,
too.
You know what? If your dad died and you didn't get to meet him, you would be angry enough.
And the fact that he's able to go back and watch that, and you imagine this little kid has probably done that a couple of times, as rebellious as he is. And, you know,
mom's off planet doing whatever
survivor's guilt
stuff she's
of,
doing.
You know, surviving when your dad sacrifices himself, you know.
At that point, do you think that she couldn't even look at him without, like, you know.
Probably.
And that's
most
why
likely.
She wasn't there.
She was doing what she needed to do to survive herself. And,
Like, I'd be curious to see if they would bring her into the movies, like in a storyline or into the comic books even, because they haven't done that yet.
Yeah. Would you Emma Swan, like, just put old lady makeup on her? Or would you, like, cast...
I'd cast somebody
like,
older.
Like, someone who's age-appropriate.
Yeah.
Like Helen Mirren.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. She'd be too old, though.
She's not too old for anything.
No, I mean, she'd be too old in the sequence of time and that. But, you know, so he steals the car and he crashes the car.
Drives it off a cliff.
The car,
drives it off a freaking cliff. And then the
Citizen,
trooper.
What is your name? That's how we get
all I could
to
think
James Kirk
of was RoboCop
time.
With that guy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And especially the Citizen.
Yeah.
But
I told you, I said that's a character where if you wanted to build off a story, like, you know,
he took him
that.
Under his wing.
He's
and made
kind
him
of
like
where
a
I would
mentee.
Like I would have liked to see him, like, maybe him, but they did it with Captain Pike.
Yeah.
I mean, further on, but he could have been the character that, you know, pushed Jim to the to the Starfleet.
Or, you know, you could even keep it the way it is. And he's the character who really kept Jim out of jail.
Yeah.
Like, you know, every time Jim got in trouble, he kind of bailed him out and, like, pushed him towards, like, you know, like a...
Like, just somebody who was helping him out along the way, but not really pushing him anywhere.
You know, because the line, do you like being the only repeat offender with a genius IQ in the Midwest? In which... The follow-up line that maybe I love it that I missed for years.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't until Angel told me, she was like, she's like, what do you mean you just heard that for the first time?
Yeah, he's literally he's very sarcastic when he meets.
So it's like, do you like being the only multiple offender, genius level multiple offender in the Midwest? Maybe I love it.
Yeah. And he's literally like pouty says it. Yeah. But yeah, that's like. That's further jumping ahead into his time. I mean, and what was cool is they kept the idea that he lived in Riverside, Iowa.
Yeah.
Which was a fan thing before it was actually canon. And that Riverside, Iowa was where they were building starships.
Yeah, just like out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, they're building the Enterprise.
I mean, if you think about it, dry dock up in space. Well, no, that's the thing is like you have to build that stuff down on a planet. Yeah. But the idea that it's out in the middle of nowhere in case something goes wrong.
Yep.
I mean, you know, they're testing warp engines and that type of stuff, you know, probably playing with stuff that they shouldn't be playing with near a city. They're doing it out by a small country town in Iowa.
Who cares if they wipe out Iowa,
and
right?
So you got a genius kid living near this, and it's like, you know, he's not in a good place.
Yeah, and watching him interact, then as he gets older, watching him interact with the cadets.
He kind of hates them because of his dad.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, of course, we meet Uhura.
And who doesn't love Zoe Saldana?
I mean, when she walks in and, like, he hangs out at this bar. Mm-hmm. You know he hangs out at this bar. And she comes in and he starts flirting with her.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's like, okay, you're not like the normal Starfleet people that I deal with, Nat. And he's kind of, like, liking her.
Yeah.
And then... The cadets start messing with him. Mm-hmm. And you know it's not the first time the cadets have messed with him before.
No, not at all by his reaction.
Yeah, and so the fight breaks out, and, you know, he's getting a crap beat out of him, but he's holding his own.
Man,
and
you can whistle really loud.
Yeah, I was going to say, then all of a sudden you hear this loud whistle.
I can't even do that whistle.
Oh, no. Yeah, I don't think he did that whistle either. So. But it's literally the bosun's whistle.
Yeah.
It's the, you know, so he... looks up and it's Bruce Greenwood, who, you know, we all know from something or other, and he
second best Batman ever.
Yeah, you said that because of his voice. He is Captain Christopher Pike,
which I thought was fantastic casting for that role
and a good idea. And
having
that character into the story,
you know, and not having him be a vegetable, you know, was great. So. Because if you don't know, in the original pilot of Star Trek, the original series, it was Captain Christopher Pike, and then you know,
Spock was on board.
I think Spock was the only Spock and Nurse Chapman were the only two that were.
It wasn't. She played a different character.
Oh, okay, it was the same actress. Yeah.
Major Barrett in the original pilot was number one. She was the first officer.
That's right.
And Spock was only the science officer, and that who actually smiles in the episode.
Yeah.
But
so
in the genre of Earth Prime, let's call it, Christopher Pike Prime had been severely burnt rescuing people from a ship and had become a vegetable. Eventually goes back to the planet Talos where these aliens could make him be who he wanted to be, but he would still be the vegetable that he was. And that's how Christopher Pike's story ended in the Prime universe.
Right.
So in this universe, it was cool that they came up with the idea of using Christopher Pike and
as the father figure.
As the father figure. And having him known Jim's dad.
Yeah. Well, did he know Jim's dad?
Yeah, because he had been on the Kelvin at the same time is pretty much the way it seems.
Because like, he did his dissertation. So I got the feeling that he was younger.
When he was on the Kelvin, he was a cadet.
Okay.
25 years. Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, the gap.
Yeah, whatever.
Of 25 years,
ages,
he would have been, a captain
at
that point.
I never took it as that they knew each other, but that makes sense.
He had met
that
him
really
at
does.
One
yeah.
point or another, you know. He
was his hero.
Him. Yeah.
You know.
He saved his life.
Yeah.
I mean, he was
if
on
that,
one of those
Yeah, I don't know if that's the way it
or,
is, but if that is, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I think that's the way they kind of alluded
to
it was that he was you know, he had saved his life, so now Christopher was saving Jim's life.
Right.
Because in the timeline, the way this, in this second universe, was Jim should have already been in Starfleet.
Yeah.
And Jim should have already been out of Starfleet.
Right.
And he should have been, like, I think he served on, like, the USS Republic or something. Mm-hmm. And at this point, he's not.
Right. There. Yeah, he's just still, some slacker.
He's still in townie Iowa.
Getting into fights.
So he kind of convinces him to join Starfleet.
Yeah.
And that. And
well, in the way he does it, too, is he makes Jim. Well, and he makes him think, he makes Jim thinks it's his idea.
Right.
Which is, like, the kind of the only way to get through to this guy.
Right.
But, you know, he shows up.
Gives his bike away.
Earl from that 70s show who Red was always firing.
Yeah.
Was like, hey, you can't park that here. He's like, well, just here, keep just it. You know? It.
Yeah. Thanks.
And then probably my favorite part of the whole movie.
Dr. McCoy.
It's the classic introduction of those two.
Where you get, you actually get the origin of the nickname Bones for this universe.
Yeah.
Where, and I had to write it down because that line is great. When Dr. McCoy sits down, because Dr. McCoy does not like space, does not want to be in space, so he's arguing with the Starfleet officer, and she makes him sit down.
Because he wants to sit in the bathroom, right, where there's no windows. Just,
there's no windows in the bathroom, so nothing bad's going to happen if I don't see anything. So he literally is, like, telling Kirk all the terrible things that could happen in space, and that, and he goes, well, why are you going to space? And he goes, the ex-wife took the whole damn planet in the divorce. All what I got left are my bones.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, there's where the nickname comes
the
from.
The look on his face was like he channeled DeForest Kelly's
ghost. Of all the actors in this movie in Into Darkness, we said the same thing. Of all the actors, he channeled that guy. He channeled DeForest Kelly like nobody else.
Like,
thank
but I will
God
say
that
this.
They cast a fan for McCoy.
Absolutely. I'll say this, though. Chris Pine nailed the Shatner mannerisms.
Yeah.
Like especially at the end when he sits down in the chair, the way he like puts his arms down, crosses his legs.
Yeah.
It's like, man, I saw that 66 times. Well, you know, 66 episodes worth of that.
Yeah.
F and A, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so no, McCoy was one of my favorite characters in the whole movie.
Yeah, definitely.
And really in the whole series, like the whole universe.
Definitely.
But so their friendship is great. They're both going to be cadets. They seem kind of old to being cadets.
Well, and I mean, McCoy's story makes sense because of the wife divorce thing. I mean, he had been a doctor already. So he was a doctor who didn't have anywhere to go.
Right.
And
he lost the whole damn planet.
Obviously, like at that point was like, you come join us, you know, it's get you off the planet, get you away from your wife type thing. And, you know, I've never been through a divorce, obviously, you know, I don't know what that would be like, but it's one of those things where if but if you're in a bad divorce and you want to get away from somebody, best idea, go to space.
Oh yeah.
So
like,
it's
just, like signing up to go to Mars now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Not that that'll happen anytime soon, but you know, people are signing up.
There's an idea for anybody who gets a divorce. but so we get them leaving.
Yeah.
And we get our first peek at the Enterprise.
Yep.
Because they literally show the NCC's 1701 on the nacelle. And then we jump ahead 3 years.
Right.
And it's near the end of their going to get out of school. Everybody's going to graduate.
And Kirk's chilling with a
summer
hot,
loving.
a hot Orion, babe.
Oh, well, Kirk's like literally like, and he still does it in Into Darkness too. Every time he walks past a girl, he's like, hey, how's it going?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
How you?
Like, yeah, he's definitely a hound. But, like, he's with, an Orion.
Rachel Nichols.
Yeah, who had been in Alias and all that type. So she was one of JJ's recasting people. But they're really, like, going at it. And I think she says she loves him. And he's like, whoa, that's weird.
Yeah.
And then, like, her roommate comes back in.
Well, okay, so what's funny about that is the Orion women can give off a pheromone.
Yeah.
Right? To make men fall in love with them. And so when she says, I love you, and he says, whoa, that's weird, the look on her face is priceless. Like, she played it perfectly.
Like, wait a minute.
And it's like,
supposed to...
it should be the other way around. Right. It's like, you know, he's like immune to their,
because he's his own.
Yeah.
He's his own machine, pretty much.
So then
the roommate walks
the
in.
The door opens, and she goes, oh my God, my roommate's going to kill me. I promised her I wouldn't have any skeevy guys back.
Right.
And so he hides under the bed. And then she has a great line. She's like, who's the mouth breather under the bed?
You can hear me? He pops up so fast and goes, "You can hear me?"
It's and like, you know that two of them have had issues at the academy.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
back like, and forth just, through the years yeah. type thing.
Like they're rivals.
Yeah. Yeah. But they seem like they might be friends, but rivals at the yeah. same time.
Like there's a begrudging respect.
Yeah.
And then when he's like, well, you know, she's like, "Don't you need to study up or rest for the
right?"
Kobayashi
that's when she
Maru.
Mentions that she had heard of the Klingon like yeah. thing where 47 right. ships have been destroyed in that. And, he's like, "I'm really fascinated by that whole thing." And she's like telling him, "You're going to fail the Kobayashi Maru tomorrow." Yeah. And he's like, "You like, we all know what's coming because right. Kirk cheats."
Yes.
The Kobayashi Maru. So then it goes to the Kobayashi
he doesn't believe
Maru
in the no
and they're all
situation.
Sitting on the bridge and, you know, Kirk's like, doing his thing as captain. And they're like, "Sir, the Klingons are attacking." And, you know, it's like, nobody's playing it really. And he's yeah. like being sarcastic about it. He's like, "Man, that's okay. Don't worry about it." And everybody's like,
"What?
What? Did he really just say?"
And then he pulls the apple out and takes
yes,
a bite.
God. I love that Chris Pine could play it so like egotistically yeah. that it was just like,
well, because I mean it's one of those things where it's just a classic like Star Wars myth or Star Trek myth about Kirk
yeah,
passing the Kobayashi Maru. And we've never seen it before.
Right.
And we heard in what was it?
Star Trek 2.
Was when, it 2 or 3?
2's when he
I don't think he
like,
tells
he
does
did.
He tell it's the Christy Alley, but
yeah,
he tells the
true.
Other one. The girl who played her in 3.
Oh, Robin Curtis?
Yeah, I think he tells her about how he reprogrammed it.
No, he tells that
was
in
it in
2?
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah, my bad.
Yeah. So in this one,
there's 12 of these movies, man. They get
I know,
all mushed
they run
together.
Together. In this version, there was a deleted scene that I watched where
okay.
it shows how he reprograms.
Yeah.
And it's the Orion girlfriend.
Ah.
She's working up in the office.
Yeah.
And she literally plugs in a flash drive kind of device that rewrites the program because he wrote a program to
okay.
override the program because he's that much of a
yeah,
genius.
Right.
And you know, the system kicks off and kicks back on and he literally beats the
right.
program.
Their
and
shields are down.
The one guy watching the observation guy goes, "How did he beat your program?"
Yeah.
And it turns the camera turns around to Spock.
Yeah,
and they show that Spock had written the Kobayashi Maru yeah. program.
And I loved the like their shields are down, open fire. Well, just one torpedo.
Yeah,
leaves.
One torpedo.
Let's not waste.
Them,
let's yeah.
not waste. And then he's like, pew, pew, pew. The one that, that
yeah,
kind
the
of,
little like gunslinger.
Yeah,
exactly. Okay, okay, we had a little bit of blip there. So we're back.
Yeah. We're good. Yeah.
Okay, good. So he had his gunslinger moment, and he just kind of shows up Spock. And
yeah.
like you said, there's the guy, "How did that kid beat your test?"
And,
and
Spock's
he's like,
literally,
I don't know.
Know.
And he looks all pouty.
Well, yeah, it's just one of those things where I think he was, you know, the way that they were doing the character, it's like, how did this human beat my machine? You know?
I'm the Vulcan. I have the superior
right.
intellect.
Right. It literally was the egotism of Spock.
Yeah.
You know, young Spock. The ego of him.
The like, hubris, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it cuts to the scene of them, all of them gathered, and Kirk's accused of cheating
with Tyler Perry as the
Tyler Perry. Yeah. Now that didn't pull me out as much.
No,
as
no, and the, it didn't. But like, I remember leaving, thinking like, I'm surprised they
Medea.
Didn't call it Tyler Perry's Star Trek.
Oh so. Yeah. yeah. Well, and that's but, the thing. I'd be curious to see, you know, Tyler Perry direct a Star Trek.
Yeah. Because
obviously he was only there because he was a fan.
Yeah.
And, you know, J.J. Abrams and him are friends.
Okay.
And but what was cool in that scene is the Admiral sitting next to him.
Right.
Is Admiral Komak, who was referred to several times in the original mm-hmm. series. And I'm like, that's a cool little thing to throw
just
in.
Just a nice
like,
little Easter egg.
Thanks for the Star Trek fan, you know?
Tip of the hat.
Yeah, exactly. So they're there. Kirk's accused, Kirk's
right.
suspended.
Right.
And then they get the distress signal from Vulcan that something bad's happening.
Yeah, Vulcan is under attack, they
yeah.
think.
Yeah.
And so they decide they're going to send the fleet.
But they don't have enough Starfleet officers, so every cadet gets to be a Starfleet officer.
Battlefield promotions
yeah,
all around.
Literally, it's so. Like everybody who's a fourth-year student, you get to go.
Yeah.
You know? Expelliarmus, you know, that stuff, you know. So literally, they're in the hangar bay. Everybody's getting assigned their ships, and Uhura gets assigned to the USS Farragut.
Right.
And literally, you could see in her face that she
just
is flaming
fury, the
mad.
Fire.
Yeah. So she goes and hunts Spock down, And you get this hint that something's going on between her and Spock because she's like, you're assigning me to the Enterprise, aren't you? And he goes, well, I thought that maybe you didn't want to be with me on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, I'm on the
Enterprise. He's like, I didn't want to show any favoritism.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, wait a minute. What's going on between these two? Yeah.
Wait, hold on. I'm not sure I'm on board with this. So he assigns her to the Enterprise.
And Kirk goes to find out what ship he's assigned to, and they tell him you're grounded, Kirk.
You're done.
McCoy gets assigned to the Enterprise. McCoy's like, well, I guess I'll see you later.
Well, and then McCoy, but then McCoy like has the like, you know, he's like, we have the saying back in Kentucky, you don't leave your prize stallion out of the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
And like,
well,
so
he felt
like,
bad. I mean, he literally walked away and felt bad and comes back.
And because Chris Pine has the greatest Charlie Brown look on his face ever, like kind of just kicking his feet, like, oh, I didn't get to go into space.
I was meant to be captain of that ship.
So and then again, one of the best parts of the movie, he's like, McCoy's like, I got this for you, we got you taken care of. Hits him with a hypo.
He literally poisons the dude
multiple times, you're my best friend,
but we're gonna this is how we're gonna get you onto the ship. And now we're gonna make you really sick. And then we're going to make you more sick.
Do you have numb tongue? Yeah. Numb tongue.
Numb tongue. What's wrong with your hands?
The Mickey Mouse glove hands, as I like to call that. Yeah, that scene is great. And especially then, so let's just kind of jump ahead.
Yeah.
So they end up on the bridge, and this is where we get the first shot of like the crew. You got Chekhov, you got Sulu, you got Spock, you got some other person who Uhura is going to take
their
spot.
Yeah, they're at the ship, and it's like, you know, literally... Uhura's not assigned to the bridge.
Right.
And,
yeah, she's, like, down in, like, engineering.
So, like, they're getting ready to take off, and, Pike's like, you, the new guy, you Russian kid, what's your name? And he's like, Chekhov. And he's like, tell everybody
Pavel
what we're doing and that. So he's telling them about lightning in space.
Well, and the best thing is when he tries to give his passcode, it's got two W's in it.
Victor. And then he has to force himself to go, Victor.
Yeah, two V's.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's the whole
thing. Show me where the nuclear vessels is.
Yeah, exactly. So he gives the whole thing the spiel about what's going on at Vulcan, and he mentions lightning in space.
Right. And so that scene right there felt like a video game cutscene.
Yeah.
You know, it's like kind of like you're on your mission, like in like a Tom Clancy or Call of Duty type game.
Right.
And it's like,
this is the way the mission's going, this is your mission, and this is what's going to happen right now. And this is what's going to happen to you.
Right. And so like that kind of took me out of that scene a little bit just because of that, because it was obviously pre-recorded.
Right.
Like he looked like 2 or 3 months younger than he was up on the bridge. Yeah. But yeah, so, and then, like you said, Kirk hears lightning.
Lightning in space, and, like, you know, obviously that's where we get the idea that he had watched everything happen that happened with the Narada.
And he read the dissertation.
And so he's still, like, he's poisoned.
Yeah.
And he goes to find Uhura because he knows she's on board.
Yeah, that's where he has the numb tongue and the Mickey Mouse
hands. Yeah, numb tongue and Mickey Mouse hands. And then, they go to the they're not even to the bridge yet because it's so funny because it's making fun of Sulu. They're pulling out and everybody else warps to Vulcan,
which the warp sound they made for that was amazing. It was like the shotgun sound but in that little pop as they got into the warp field.
That's one of those things where I wish like they used to back when they were doing when Pocket Books was doing Star Trek books all the time. They did technical manuals.
Yeah.
I wish they would have done a technical manual.
I have the technical manual for Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan, Enterprise B or whatever it was. Okay. Or A.
Yeah.
So.
And that's what I wish they would have done, some kind of technical manual book, because those starships looked awesome.
They're amazing.
Yeah, they were different designs and
Speaking of the weird designs of the starship, like how big is the interior of the Enterprise? Because like those ceilings were like 90 feet tall.
Oh, you're talking about the engineering?
Yeah. Like were they in the neck? At that point, like
we're getting into two technical terms, but the way the engineering sat was right below where the neck from the saucer section
was. So it's just like it had this like ever expanding ceiling, and I always like kind of wondered
because
about
they
that,
were at the Anheuser-Busch facility filming.
True.
Everybody's getting drunk while they're filming engineering scenes, so like they
end up on the bridge.
Sulu doesn't turn off something.
Inertial dampener or whatever.
And it's one of those things where it's like the simple convenience of it, but it's like they lucked out by Sulu being the new pilot.
Well, it's a great plot device.
Yeah, because he literally turns around and says, I'm sorry, such and such is sick. I'm, you know, this is my first time really flying a starship. Like, I've been trained and all that, but this is my first time. And Spock says, like, turn off this. And he goes, oh, like, you see on his face, he's like, oh, man, that's what it was.
Balls.
Pushes the button, and they warp.
Right.
And at that point, Kirk is running to the bridge.
Yeah.
And
we need a full stop.
Everybody's like, what the hell are you doing here?
Who's this guy in the black shirt? What group is a black shirt in?
Pike's like, you were suspended. You're not even supposed to be here. And, you know, he's like, well, you mentioned lightning in space. There's only been one other time that I've heard about lightning in space.
The day of my birth.
It was the day of my birth. And Spock's like, get him off the bridge. Get him out of here.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. And literally, they warp out. They come out of warp. And it's just a bunch of destroyed starships.
Just the entire fleet that they had. How many portion
year
of them.
Four students died?
Yeah. A whole generation of Starfleet officers were wiped out.
Right. Like that.
Like that. Yeah, and you know, the whole thing.
We get our first full look of Narada.
Yeah, since the battle. Yeah.
We get R2-D2 floating in space.
Yes, we do.
So. Yeah, so you can see it on the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
You definitely can see it on the Blu-ray when you pause it.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
It's just a fun little Easter egg. Especially, later on, too, that he got to,
yeah, it became,
you know.
Yeah.
So, all right, so the Narada is digging a hole. So, like we said before, it was initially a mining ship.
Yeah.
So they're digging a hole into Vulcan. We don't know why, but their ship, the laser, the drill, whatever.
Right. It's causing subspace distortions. Sorry, it's Trek.
So they can't do. So they can't communications or teleportation or anything like that.
No transporter technology is working.
So, and then this is where we get really the first introduction to Nero.
Who actually is talking at this point.
And he sees the Enterprise. He stops them from destroying it. And he then contacts them.
Hello.
Hello.
And they're all like...
He's like, I'm Nero.
What are these Romulans doing here?
And then he's like, you know,
does the same thing that Iel did by saying, your captain needs to come over here.
Well, but I love it because he's like, I'm Captain Christopher Pike. Christopher Pike. Hello, Christopher. I'm Nero.
Yeah.
And it was like, Eric Bana played that perfectly.
Yeah, this is like one of the best things I've ever seen Eric Bana.
And he was underutilized.
Yeah.
He really was underutilized. And like the Nero story in the comic.
Yeah.
Like the Nero comic and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, they would
have
had that.
Like, oh, man. They missed a great opportunity.
Even with him not talking, he still was a presence.
He was. He was great.
So, and then from
there,
best
thing he's been in since Ang Lee's Hulk.
Ooh, wow.
I'm kidding. Jeez. He was horrible in that.
I don't think that movie even needs to exist.
I still think if they call that something other than Hulk, like if it's just some random monster movie and they make him like
Crouching
Blue
Banner
or something.
Hulk.
Oh, Crouching Tiger 2 was on Netflix in a couple
days. Yeah, but Crouching Banner, Hidden Hulk.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So you know, you have this. Christopher goes over.
But he has a plan.
Nero does. Oh, Christopher does.
Yeah. And so he literally, as he's walking through the shuttle and everybody's walking with him. And
well, he
asks
for people with hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
And so when Sulu pipes up, like, based on, like, the experience Pike has had with him to that point, don't you think he might have questioned that a little bit?
I think he paused for a moment, but he doesn't have much of a choice.
Yeah, come on, let's go.
Yeah.
And it's not till they're in the jump ship where he's like, oh, it's fencing. And Kirk looks at him like,
oh, shit.
Fencing? Yeah.
Well, and they get the red shirt in there who's too eager to please.
That guy was like crazy.
Yeah.
How did you get
that guy as the chief engineer of your starship?
Well, how do you just give one person explosives?
Yeah. Well, like, yeah, that too.
I mean, like, come on. NASA, even to this day, like, triples up on everything, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're telling me Starfleet can't do that? That was really just poor writing, to be honest.
It was just like leaving a gaping hole for, you know, what they were gonna do.
Well, but I mean, even that guy was poor writing he waited so long to deploy his chute. So he's gonna have them jump out of the shuttle onto the platform while he flies over. Like, you know, as luck would have it, he can fly right by the drill
it was one of those things where it's like, you know, it was well enough done that you're like, yeah, they wouldn't have noticed him drop those three guys.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's, at this point, it's them fighting on the drill, and Sulu actually kicks butt.
Yeah, and that sword
was
awesome.
His lightsaber.
It kind of was.
Yeah. the way it pops out.
But so that battle is great. Some cool hand to hand. It felt very much like a Star Wars scene, so than a Star Trek scene. But you get to see kind of Kirk's perseverance and then his improvisation when he takes the gun. He's like, "Well, we're just going to shoot this." And then you see his loyalty to his crewmates when he just dives after Sulu as he falls off.
Goes after him.
Again, how cheap are those parachutes? Oh, yeah, it's like that it just rips right off.
Like, with that one,
like this is what happens when the lowest bidder gets to make all your stuff. You know, it might work.
But Chekhov shows that he is supposed to be where he's supposed to be.
And again, he's a 17-year-old genius. Right. And you know, he's like, they're falling, and the girl's like, "I can't do that." He's like, "I can do that."
Yeah.
But like, how far, like, again, this is where, like, the spatial time and
of the,
you know,
ship.
Of the ship really comes into play, because he runs from the bridge, leaves no one in command.
Right.
Just takes off and goes to, you know, do his thing.
Right.
But, like, it didn't seem like they had that far to fall.
Probably a couple decks down.
Maybe. Yeah. So. But, like, in the time it took them to fall and it took him to get there, it didn't match up.
Right.
And if you're wondering why Chekhov is in charge, Spock goes down to the planet because there's no communications.
Right.
The elders all go hide out in a cave.
Yeah, the Kulinar cave, or the Katra cave.
Yeah.
Because it's beckoning back to Spock putting his Katra in the McCoy.
And
so the history of Vulcan is in one cave.
And so they got to go get them. And so Spock goes and gets them. As they're running out, a couple of them are smashed.
Yeah.
You know,
it's pretty vicious.
Yeah, and so then they get to the edge, and Chekhov is beaming them up. And apparently the technology is not as good as it was on Enterprise for the transporter, because they have to stand perfectly still for like 5 minutes.
Right.
And, you know, Spock's mom falls off the bridge, you know, and or off the ledge.
The cliff literally goes out from under her as she's being beamed.
Right.
So her atoms get scrambled pretty much.
Well, do they, or does she fall out of it? Because I think you see the body falling and like tumbling down the hill.
Yeah, I think she literally fell out of it.
Okay. And so what's important here is now in this universe, Kirk has lost his dad, who is a major influence on him. And now Spock has lost his mom,
who was the major influence.
Like, because Spock and Sarek in the original, were very much adversarial.
She was
father
what held
and son.
Them together.
She was the mediator.
Yeah,
and so you have the two characters now who were really raised and based their whole ideology on a parent that is now lost.
Right.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, such a great turn of events. You know, they all end up back on the ship.
Well, it's a turn of events on Spock, because he gave Kirk crap about his dad being a hero and dying. And now, oh, your mom's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not supposed to be emotional about it because you're a Vulcan.
Yeah. Does that even compute?
Yeah.
And again, a great scene. That's really the first time where you see the chemistry between Pine and Zachary Quinto.
Yeah.
Because at first I had wondered how well they were going to mesh together, and were they ever going to get to the point where, like, we could buy them as friends.
Right.
And that was the first time where it's like, okay, these two are completely on the same page.
When they fight after Kirk meets Spock.
When he's like, get him off of my ship.
Get him off the ship, and he launches
him out. Dumps him onto an ice planet that Spock Prime happens to be on.
Yeah.
But more importantly, Scotty happens to be on. Yeah. So, again, I think they waited way too long to introduce Simon Pegg into this movie.
I think, but it makes sense in the way that you're like...
Yeah, but I mean, outside of Carl Urban, he nails Scotty.
He gets
in a different way than what James Doohan did.
Right.
But like, still...
he has the best line in the whole movie.
Yeah.
I'd like to get my hands on them apple nasals, you know what I mean.
If you'll forgive the parlance.
Yeah.
Did you read the DC Star Trek comics back in the day?
Yeah.
So he was very much that Scotty.
Right.
You know, he was more of the brogue and a little more brutish, but like still very, very smart and, you know, not quite as regal as James Doohan was.
Yeah. Not the Scotty from the movies, but the Scotty from the TV series. He was always getting drunk and getting in trouble.
Yeah. And Romulan ale. Yeah. All the time.
Well, I mean, he had a bottle of scotch in his room. I mean, it's like, you know, you're getting drunk and fighting Klingons. And, you know, he was always the one who was like the first one to throw a punch.
Right.
And that besides Kirk.
Yeah. Oh, and he was right there. He always had Kirk's back.
This Simon Pegg version was as believable as that Scotty.
Yep, I agree.
The TV version.
I liked his little partner.
Oh, yeah. Keenser?
Yeah. That relationship was great.
Yeah.
You know.
And like, then, where did these guys meet? And yeah. How did they both get in trouble and get stuck on the same
planet? And we learn why Scotty's exiled.
Oh, because he beamed Admiral Archer's dog off his prize-winning
beagle.
Up. Yeah.
And, you know, it's out there somewhere.
Right.
Great callback to Enterprise.
Yeah.
You know, great callback. Like, it would have been great to have seen, like, old man Scott Bakula somewhere going around. But yeah, it like the introduction of Scotty for me was like, okay, this is complete. I'm all in. I'm all in for this reboot.
And the whole thing was Spock telling Kirk everything that had happened up until that point, everything that we knew from Star Trek Countdown.
Yeah.
And
in the flashback, we took the Federation's fastest ship.
Right.
No, you built the fastest ship because it had one purpose.
Right. And but the whole thing at the end when they're getting ready to head to the station where Scotty is, and he goes, "Did my dad live in the other universe?"
Yeah.
And he's like, "Yeah, you got to see him.
He got to see you
become the captain of the Enterprise.
Yeah, you were."
And at this point, Kirk's like, "I'm not the captain of the Enterprise."
Yeah, and he's like, "Wait, what do you mean you're not the captain? Well, you just kicked me off."
Yeah, so, exactly.
And then the whole thing about figuring out the beaming,
the
teleporter technology, the transwarp, and he's like, "It's like shooting a bullet at a smaller bullet whilst riding a horse whilst blindfolded."
Yeah,
you know, and it was like. Then Spock types a few keystrokes in. He's like, "Oh,
I never thought of space as a thing that was moving."
And so, you know, and then this is where we get Kirk back on the Enterprise
with Scotty.
Spock gives him the tidbit and nugget of information that he needs to get back into command.
Yeah, it's pretty much the whole thing where if you watched your planet die, you would be really bothered.
And his mom. You're playing your mom.
But Spock didn't even know that.
Well, yeah, he doesn't know that.
But he's like, you know, if you watch
I'm emotionally compromised.
Yeah, you're going to be emotionally compromised.
So, and then luckily McCoy was with them when Kirk got named first officer.
Right.
Because I don't think anybody would really.
Yeah.
They'd be like, "Who are you, guy?" You know,
whatever. So he comes back, confronts Spock. Spock shows that
beats
he is
the
emotionally.
Crap out of him.
Yeah, but he shows he's emotionally compromised and realizes he's emotionally compromised. And pretty much says, "I can't be in command."
This James Kirk can take a punch.
Yeah, he can.
So,
yeah, and get the hell beat out of him several times.
But
then it's the whole thing of we got to get Nero, and because they already seen what he's going to do to he did to Vulcan,
right?
He's going to do to Earth,
right?
And Spock pretty much figures that out
while
he's you know.
But Spock's wanting to go follow Pike's original orders and go back to where the rest of the fleet is held.
Whatever
the belt
was,
or like, system or
where were they going out there?
Yeah, why are they not coming to the you know? Right. Why aren't they on their way to Earth?
Right. Yeah.
You know, or how far away is that from Earth?
So then you realize because Spock Prime had told Kirk, "We're friends,"
right?
You know, and Kirk pretty much like after their confrontation is like, you know, maybe we can be friends. He's like in his head, you can tell he's like thinking maybe we can be friends.
And so this is another one of my cons of the movie is Leonard Nimoy. Because his dentures keep clicking every time he talks.
You know.
So he's like, "You are now and always have been my friend."
Yeah.
And it's like, oh man, it just took me out of it for
dentures
some reason.
Dentures of all people are allowed in the 24th century.
No, and I get it, but it was just one of those things. And, you know, it's a minor thing. And like, it doesn't affect how I feel. But
I say, you know, if they wouldn't have got Leonard Nimoy, they wouldn't have been able to do this movie.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
They would have had to use someone from the next generation.
Right, yeah.
Like Data or something like that.
Right, yeah. They would have had to really, like, you know. I would be curious to see if there was a plan.
Yeah.
In case they wouldn't have got Leonard Nimoy.
I wonder how they're going to treat Nimoy's death in Star Trek Beyond.
I think they're going to acknowledge it in the comic books.
Yeah.
And not acknowledge it in the movie.
Yeah. We'll see.
You know. That's pretty much the way it's going to go.
So anyway, so now they're rocketing towards Earth. Kirk is, you know, we're going to go save Pike.
He's the captain at this
point.
And
he's the captain. He and Spock end up on the Narada.
Yeah.
One of the lamest fight battle scenes ever because the Romulans are apparently stormtroopers.
Right. Because
they can't hit anything.
Right.
And then Clifton Collins has Kirk by the neck, you know, and it's like, just kill him.
Right.
Kill him. What are you waiting for? Started monologuing.
Nero was going to do him in,
right.
And Spock steals the jellyfish.
Yeah.
and literally starts blowing the hell out of the Narada.
And that was great where he's like, I feel like I've been, you know, from your action, I feel like I've piloted this ship before.
Well, he walks in and the ship greets him.
Yeah, hello.
As Ambassador Spock.
Hello, Ambassador Spock.
Yeah, and he's like, do you want to tell me something?
I can't.
Yeah.
I want to, but I can't.
Literally, it's that reaction.
So, but
so they do the whole thing where Spock destroys the drill because the drill is drilling into San Francisco Bay.
Right.
And the drill comes down and destroys
the Golden Gate Bridge.
Golden Gate Bridge.
Which we just had a conversation the other
day.
We left this one out. Like,
yeah,
you
well,
know.
No, we mentioned this one.
Did we?
I said this was probably the first time the Golden
right,
Gate Bridge
say this was
gets
the first
destroyed
one.
In a movie.
In a while.
And now everything's...
Well, because it used to be everything in New York
right.
got destroyed. And now it's San Francisco.
So he destroys the drill and Nero is incensed at this point that Spock is beating him.
Right.
So Spock takes off to get away far away from Earth as he can.
Right.
And literally warps out. And that's another cool sound effect.
Yeah.
When
that
when
little
the Narada
pop
takes
there,
off
yeah.
and it's like,
oh,
he goes
it's like
chasing.
A shotgun.
Yeah. So they end up in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And Spock's coming at the Narada. Narada's fired every missile they have. And the Enterprise shows up.
Yep.
And literally blows up everything with photon torpedoes and phasers. And then Kirk and Pike escape.
Right.
And Spock beams off. Like, literally, what is it? Scotty says, that's
I've
the
never...
first time I've ever beamed two targets from two different ships all at the same time.
Onto one, three yeah. targets from two different ships onto one platform.
Yeah. And yeah. literally, like... Spock sets the jellyfish to just hit the Narada
right
with the red matter
and it's
on
got
it.
The entire Rimbaldi ball
oh, yeah.
of red matter
yeah and literally and blows like that's a cool effect scene because it just shows all the little balls.
The little droplets
yeah.
I'm a big fan of the little droplets
right
and, you know
so then you know they give Nero the chance
yep
like
yeah.
you know
and you know he doesn't mean it
like yeah,
you know he's like we're prepared to you know embark on a search and rescue and Nero's
yeah.
like gives him the finger essentially yeah, yeah. he's like I wouldn't take help from you like you if I were
yeah.
on fire I wouldn't even ask you to pee on me.
Right it's pretty much what it is what yeah. he says to him and they let the Narada be destroyed by a black hole
and of course they wait way too long like as soon as he says no you turn around and leave
just get out of there
just,
yeah
you know
but I think
so.
For both of them the satisfaction of seeing him die because both their parents had
there's
died.
There's a rear view camera you
well,
can
sure,
watch,
yeah.
you know?
So then the warp engines cut out.
Well, no, the warp engines don't cut out. They're
and
at
they
full
fall
warp.
Into, they get into
but
the.
But they're on the event horizon.
Right. So they're
and
getting pulled
so,
in.
And then, again, this is where I kind of question and I worry about physics. And, like, Neil deGrasse Tyson talks about how, like, Star Trek is better than Star Wars because it's real science.
Right.
If you dump your warp core and blow it up, it's not pushing you forward. Because you
it's
have no
momentum,
you
much.
But like just like you have no momentum pushing
right.
you forward at that point, and in space, there's no friction or anything.
Right.
You're just stopped until something runs into you, or you can have you know, like Matt Damon in The Martian, where he uses the air pocket from
right.
the glove, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, that
kind of
is what it seemed like, though.
But
because
but
the
it
way
seems
it
to go
out
and it like blows out, but then like.
Because the ship doesn't
do they still
go
have
in
do they still
it
have
goes,
impulse
like,
engines?
Flips,
do they?
Yeah,
you know, I'm just curious
well,
as to like what
the way
kind
the
of engine they have.
Works
left.
Is the warp engines and impulse engines are two different technologies.
Okay,
so when they get knocked forward,
they just
you
kick
know,
into
it
impulse,
just, like bumps them.
But
and then they kick in the impulse.
They're around like Jupiter, right?
Somewhere
Saturn, something like they come up through
yeah.
Saturn's rings, don't they?
Well, that's yeah, that's where they were when they went to attack. But
right.
I think at the point that they destroy the Narada. They're not in our solar system.
Okay.
Because
so,
it was just get as far away as possible because this is what we're going to do and it's going to involve a black hole.
See,
because
I always
cause spatial anomalies.
I always felt
and,
like they were still in the Milky Way.
Right.
And like, because when they destroyed the drill there, when
right.
Spock shoots it out and everything, it just feels like they're way too close to Earth, like, for things to make sense.
Right.
But again, I mean, it's space. It's science
yeah.
fiction. My
it's
suspension
one of those things
is
where you have to build
yeah.
your own. Story
my disbelief
around some
is suspended.
Of it.
You know,
right.
I'm on board. But you know, so yeah, it's just one of those things where.
So the, in the end, they're
yeah.
back on Earth, and you know,
and Pike comes out
much,
in a wheelchair,
yeah.
which I thought was great. I wish it would have been like that,
like he was
like the
like
half
he would
body
have been
thing,
locked kinda into
yeah, like
it.
Like the Professor X wheelchair
yeah.
from the '90s cartoon.
Right. So he comes out. They make Kirk the captain of the Enterprise, and
I like his reaction. He's like, you know, I'm here to relieve you. And he's like, I stand relieved. Yeah. And he's like relieved that like Kirk is finally the man who he should have been.
So then it goes to a meeting between the Spocks.
Yeah.
And Spock from this universe mistakes Spock Prime as his father.
Which is pretty cool.
And he literally, when he turns around and it's like, you know, he confirms everything that Spock suspects.
Right.
Because Spock had been on the jellyfish and was like, what's going on? And he turns around and goes, I am not our father.
Right.
And it's one of those things where it's a cool conversation. It's fun. And it's, you know, the acknowledgement of he says, I'm not going to say live long and prosper.
It would be self-serving.
Yeah, it would be self-serving. And then it goes to him standing above the Starfleet, like, the gathering room, whatever you want to call it. And he starts rattling off, like, Spock starts rattling off what, you know, like, things they're doing on the Enterprise bridge. And then it's showing them saying these things.
Right.
And then Spock comes in and tells Kirk, I would like to be your first officer.
And well, and I think the important thing that you kind of glossed over there is Spock Prime says, you know, we have the unique opportunity to be two places in one.
Right.
So you can rebuild Vulcan.
Right.
And you can be the first officer on the Enterprise because I'm here.
Right.
So I'll go rebuild Vulcan with all my knowledge and, you know,
yeah, I know things, a place already.
I I'm, what, 250 years old at this point. Like, I know more things.
Yeah, he pretty much is like, I know a place already.
Yeah.
Like, he pretty much tells him that. Like, I know a place. We're going to go there.
It's this planet. It's called Arrakis.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. But it's one of those things where it ends on the best note it can with Leonard Nimoy reading the, you know, Space, the Final Frontier. Because, you know, at this point, Nimoy had said, this is my last movie.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously JJ was able to convince him to come back for Into Darkness for 2 minutes. Yeah. But, you know, like I said, I don't think this movie would have got made without Leonard Nimoy.
I agree.
One of his best performances is Spock.
His best performance is Spock.
Yeah.
Most likely. Yeah. Maybe, I guess he wasn't technically Spock. There's
a lot of,
Spock,
like, I have a lot of love for the original series and, you know, his performance as Spock on there. But, like, of all the movies he was in, this is probably his best performance.
I liked him most in 4.
Yeah.
The Voyage Home. I think that was his best, like, Leonard Nimoy's best performance.
Right.
But I agree, like, as Spock, this is definitely one of the best Spock performances. Right.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, and him to give pass the baton on to
Zachary Quinto,
and you know, those two became friends because of this.
It's striking how similar they look too, because like and again, some of it was makeup and things
But
like they didn't do anything to Quinto's nose jaw or anything like that. So
no, and you know, like I said, I think this is in my top 5. I think I'm gonna have to actually write down in order how I like Star Trek movies, so we can start putting that up. You know, it's a fun movie.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you get the vibe of where he was going in Force Awakens with action and adventure. And I think this was his test drive to try and do some of those special effects and see what he could do.
Yep.
He got to work with Industrial Light and Magic. So
that was his first time with them, right?
I think so. Yeah. He might've done some stuff with them with Mission Impossible, but.
Oh yeah. I forgot about Mission Impossible 3. Like,
not as much as he did with this. This, you know, he's literally probably was at Industrial Light and Magic a lot.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I think it looked great aside from the lens flares,
which, you know, we didn't see much of an Into Darkness, so.
Well, and we didn't see it. We saw one in The Force Awakens.
In the desert, there will be lens flares.
But, you know, I think for this, like, it's almost distracting. That's, like, my last con for this one.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, I think the story makes up for any of J.J. Abrams' visual immaturities. Yeah.
I guess my one other con for this movie was just a minor complaint.
Yeah.
I would have liked to seen Spock wearing a gold shirt when he was captain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that would have been cool.
That would have been cool.
Yeah.
Because we've never seen that.
Never seen Spock in a gold shirt.
Have we ever seen him in a red shirt?
No.
No, it's always been
the
blue.
And see, like in one of the novels for the original series of books, there was one point where he got promoted to captain.
Okay.
And he was wearing a gold shirt. Oh. They describe him in a gold shirt. And I'm like, That would be so cool to see. Neat to see.
It would look weird, but it would be neat to see.
Yeah.
All right. So real quick, how would you rate this?
On what level? What scale?
Okay. So IMDb users give an 8 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes gave this one a 95%, and Metacritic gave it an 82%.
Okay.
So out of 10, like we've been doing, so out of 10.
This is probably like an 8.5.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 8 out of 10 on this one because there were things about it that took me out of the movie at times. But overall, I enjoyed it. It's insanely rewatchable.
It's a Star Trek movie.
And it is a Star Trek movie. But I mean, it is insanely rewatchable.
Right. Unlike Into Darkness, this one definitely felt Star Trek. Into Darkness did not feel enough Star Trek.
No. And I think that was because they made that huge misstep by shoehorning Khan. And then shoehorning the end of the movie. Into Darkness felt like two different movies. There was the movie with John Harrison and the Vengeance, and then there was the end with Khan.
Right.
You know, this was definitely a cohesive story. There were a lot of people involved in this kind of finding their way creatively. Right. And I feel like they all did a really good job of finding that voice.
Paramount took a risk.
Oh, a huge risk.
Doing this movie and doing it the way they did it. And I think that it worked out for them.
Well, I mean, so next we're going to review Nemesis, right?
Yeah.
Like, Nemesis, by all means, should have killed the Star Trek franchise.
Yeah.
And we'll talk more about that.
Even though I like it.
We'll talk more about that next month. But yeah.
And yeah, we'll do... I mean, obviously, we're not done with the Abrams verse.
No.
You know, that's what we have
Beyond coming.
We'll have Beyond in July, and we'll do that. We'll do that as a separate review.
And we'll do that. We'll do that like in real time. We won't wait until the end of the year. Or anything
right.
Like that,
so that one's just going to happen.
Yeah.
In July,
we might just do that one as part of an episode, or that can be like the week.
We'll probably
podcast,
do a Star Trek where we review whatever movie that is that month plus Beyond.
Yeah.
And just make it a longer episode. This Mega one's cast. Long enough.
I know you were targeting 45
minutes. I said
45
minutes, and I'm like, I looked at the time, and I went, okay, we're
done. You said 45 minutes, and I texted and said, or shorter.
Yeah, so, we weren't going shorter.
No. All right, so.
We like this movie too much.
We do. We both like this movie a lot. And
we're not going to have a lot to say about Star Trek Insurrection.
You mean Nemesis?
No, Insurrection's the one I hate.
Insurrection has F. Murray Abraham in it, guys, darn it.
Yeah, and?
F. Murray.
Yeah, and Nemesis has Tom Hardy.
It's a Simpsons joke.
Hardy.
Never mind. I'll tell you later. So,
Insurrection is
it's
the
not
one
good.
Where I'm like, yeah, that'll that be
was,
a half hour.
Was that Jonathan Frakes directing?
That was his last one.
Yeah.
But that was the one where the studio got too involved.
Yeah. Well, and that's another one where it's a tale of two
movies.
We'll
tear it apart.
Anyway, all right, so.
I'll tear it apart.
Johnny told you at the beginning, find everything at infamouspodcast.com.
Yes.
Give us a review, subscribe on iTunes.
Just thanks for listening.
Yeah, listen. If you have questions, email us.
Sorry
you can find us on
so
the contact page. We have a lot to say. We're very opinionated.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think what I really like about what we've been doing is we try and stay as positive as possible about
things. Yeah.
And like, you know, we've ripped on DC a lot lately.
Yeah.
But like, if you listen to this past week's episode, I have a lot of hope for Rebirth, and I'm going into it with a really positive attitude. I'm going into the whole slate of summer movies with a positive attitude,
and
especially Star Trek Beyond.
I don't, you know, I'm not negative at all when it comes. I'm negative when I
get the
product.
Yeah. So, anyway, I think this is one that people went into and like, are you thinking?
I was just like, where are we going with this one?
And I was like, holy crap, we're getting like an updated Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
And you know, so, I think, you know, one last thing to leave on, right? So the technology of, like, the Enterprise and things like that was far beyond what we saw on the series, right?
Yeah.
And I think part of that, and I think you and I had this conversation a couple years ago, was because of the Narada.
Yeah.
Because they were like, oh, well, there's this thing out there. We need to up our game. And that's why it's a
and
much
we get that
more,
kind of explanation in Into Darkness.
Right.
But that's one of those things where it was like, yeah, it makes sense.
But I mean, they still weren't warships. They were still
exploration
vessels.
Exploration.
But they still were able to hold their own in a fight. Where, like, if you watched Enterprise, right?
Yeah.
Like, that was the thing. They went out into space, and they weren't even fully armed.
They didn't even know what they were doing.
But, like, you know, they didn't even have their phasers installed.
Right.
You know, so it just shows this universe changed. And it changed a lot of things. And it could have made this movie much darker than they did. But at the end of the day, it's a fun movie. Watch it. Have fun.
Yeah. If you like this movie, definitely check out the IDW books.
Yeah.
I mean, they're continuing off of the movies.
They are. And they're very good.
Is like, yeah. And so. I mean, they've been giving carte blanche to do whatever they want to do. As long as when the movie's coming, they branch back into the movie. So yeah, check out that stuff. I mean, you know, let us know what you think about this. We've talked about maybe in September just doing a Star Trek month.
Yeah.
Because that will be the actual anniversary of the first airing mm-hmm. of Star Trek. So let us know what you think. If you want to hear that, if you don't want to hear that.
Yeah, email us. Let us know on your comments what you think, what you want to hear. Like, especially about Star Trek, because it is the 50th. And, you know, it being such a big part of our lives, we want to talk about
this. Tell us
what
you don't like. Tell us what you like.
But, and we were able to work Star Trek comic books into the conversation. Yes. So that makes me happy.
Yes.
All right, guys. Thank you. This has been a lot of fun. I hope you guys enjoyed this as much as we did.
Join us weekly. New shows go up on Friday.
Every Friday.
So... And, you know, come back next month for another Star Trek.
Yep. Nemesis.
Nemesis.
So, and look for these like bonus type episodes on Tuesdays. Is typically when we do these. Yeah. We're trying to get some cool things going in the works for.
So this will be Tuesdays. The February show, but it'll be posted on a Tuesday, which will be March.
Will it?
Yeah, it will.
Well, I'll put it, you know, I'll do it on February 29th as a surprise. All right. As a special day for the extra February day. All right, guys. This has been the Infamous Podcast. I'm Brian.
Johnny.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.